Welcome to Mecha Do About Nothing, the only mecha podcast recorded in the zone of absolute fortune. I'm your host, Ian Gregory.
And I'm your host, Daniel Forziat.
And this week we watched episodes 21 through 26 of Vision of Escaflowne, which brings us to an end of all our Escaflowne-related content until we decide to, like, do the movie or there's a sequel or something. There's some other Escaflowne out there. We're not in a rush,
what will happen? Is like 2 years from now, we'll be like, yo, you remember Visions of Escaflowne? What a wild ride that was. And then we'll be like, we should watch the movie. And then we'll do that. I guarantee it.
Yeah, I think that's right. boy, well, this is it. This is what they do. This is just six episodes to wrap up all of this show. And somehow they decided, they were like, wow, we've only got six episodes left to finish telling this story. Let's introduce a few more plot elements just to make certain.
And boy, I don't like any of them.
this is a weird set of episodes, right? Is this how you thought they were going to end it?
I didn't think there would be like twist after twist in every single episode. Uh-huh. Thought it would be like a little too late for that, but there is one twist that we are going to talk about at the beginning of our discussion that I did really like, where it just like came out of nowhere. And then there's another twist that I did not like at all that we'll also talk about later in the discussion.
I mean, but yeah, wow. Things sure happened in these episodes. I don't even know if I've digested them fully. Weird show. Weird ending. I think, remember how in the first like two blocks we were like, this is fine. Like the pacing makes sense. A little slow, mm-hmm. but it doesn't feel like it's a 50 episode show, like it was meant to be longer. Now that we are at the end, I'm like, yes, you can see that the show was meant to be longer, and they did not. It's not, and they decided not to get rid of some of the things that might have been better left in an uncut version.
Yes, for sure.
That and like the last week, the romance really got interesting. Like they were doing interesting things with the romance. Things happened in this week for sure. But none of them good. Like, I don't know. I don't really like what happened with the romance.
No, I agree.
I felt like every character was really dumb.
Yeah. And also, like, a lot of the romance happens, like, not face-to-face, if you know what I mean. It happens, like, in an anime way, where both characters are thinking about each other at, like, mm-hmm. the same time. Where it's like, oh, this person. And it's like, but you're not...
Yeah.
You're not doing anything. Right.
We'll get into that later. We'll have a whole section on the romance. Don't worry. We'll go over every character's fates because they all have different fates for some reason.
All right. That's so good.
Picking up from last time, which you may recall is the wedding of Malerna and Dryden. The leopard women have a bad reaction to their special luck infusion, and they're forced to retreat, leaving Hitomi behind. Arya makes it back, but Narya crashes and then kidnaps Hitomi. Narya is very sick and weak, and Hitomi helps her, but she dies in Fulcan's arms instead of kidnapping Hitomi. Also, Arya died earlier, too. Don't worry about it. This turns Fulcan against the Emperor. Hitomi and Vaan meet with Fulcan, and Fulcan stops the dragons from attacking them. They've met a bunch of dragons. Don't worry about it. as well as explaining the reasons for abandoning Fanilia. It's, like, symbolically important, but not really to the plot. Then Fulcan, he says that he wants to create a world without war, but in a different way than the Emperor plans to. Fulcan then goes back with them to Astoria and explains to everyone what's been going on, and they create an alliance to fight back against Zybok, only like 22 episodes too late. Alan confesses that he is Chid's father to Hitomi and then asks her to marry him. Real 1-2 punch. Before she can respond, the Empire attacks, and Hitomi witnesses the fight through Vaan's eyes. Angry and scared by Vaan's bloodlust and his desire to protect her, she asks to go home, which happens. However, this time she returns to Earth a day before she left and relives the day before her abduction. On Gaia, Alan discovers that his long-lost sister, who is actually Dilindau, but made into a guy by the Fate Machine. Alan then decides that he only really loved Hitomi because he missed his sister. Hitomi, on Earth, realizes that she loves Vaan, and he appears in a pillar of light to take her back to Gaia. Vaan and Alan fight the Empire while Hitomi is in Astoria, but she asks Fulcan to take her to the Emperor so they can end this conflict. They arrive, and Fulcan kills Dornkirk, but in the process, kills himself. Hitomi's sadness triggers the Fate Machine, while Dornkirk's ghost tells her that everything is going according to plan. We are now in the Zone of Absolute Fortune, whatever that means. Vaughn fights Dillendow and almost kills him before Alan stops him, because Dillendow is actually his sister, and the two of them fight for a while. Hitomi manages to stop them fighting via telepathy, and Vaughn gets out of the Escaflowne and flies his little angel wing over to Hitomi. His flight ends up stopping the fighting because he's literally an angel. Hitomi and Vaughn then embrace, and their love stops the fate machine from causing war, and the machine explodes, and Dornkirk gives up. Gaia begins to rebuild, and Hitomi returns to Earth, promising to always remember Vaughn.
And so it has ended.
How touching. I hate it.
All right, highlights.
All right, for me, for number one, it's so... Dillendow hasn't been in the show for, like, 10 episodes, right? Like,
yes.
Dillendow got crushed by Vaughn in that one fight, and he's basically out of the show. And then we just see Dillendow waking up in his bed, and he's like, who's alive? And he's, like, asking if all his teammates are alive, and they're all dead. So he just screams and rips off his shirt, and he's like, let's go to battle.
It's a very good scene. I like it. But also makes another part later very questionable.
Yeah. Dillendow, I think all right, we'll get into the problem of Dillendow later.
what an
annoying character. My other highlight is Hitomi being like, I want to go home, and then she just does.
Like, that was the twist that blew my mind. I was like, she goes home?
She's just like, I don't want this. Crazy. She's gone.
Yeah, awesome. I couldn't believe that. And then mine leads into that, which is the scene in the classroom when she's, like, reliving the day. And the professor's like, Sir Isaac Newton, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, oh, my God.
Yeah, that's funny, though.
Yeah, I was like, okay, I'll allow that one.
Why don't we stay on this topic? Because it is our first discussion topic, and I have some thoughts on it. So Hitomi returns to Earth in, like, episode 23.
She goes back to Earth. I can't believe it.
So I kind of like this. I feel like I theorized something like this, right? Like, she'd go back to Earth and figure out, like, what she wants out of life is in the process.
Mm-hmm.
But she's like, I think maybe it's that she never really wanted to go back to Earth. And she was always kind of enjoying her time on Gaia with, like, hot boys who all love her. And yes. Finally, she's like, now she actually wants to go home, so she can. But what the impression I got is I felt like her going back to Earth was meant to be, like, a mini arc. Assuming this were twice as long, I think we'd spend 2 to 3 episodes, maybe. Probably 2 episodes of her back on Earth.
Sure.
And seeing, like, people on Gaia reacting to her being gone. Instead, it's like a day. It's like 15 minutes of in-game time, so to speak.
Yeah. Like, you're right. Like, it could have been cool seeing her, like, go talk to her mom and her mom be like, yeah, your grandma did this. Yeah. Isn't that wild? And they can, like, have a discussion or something. And you can, like, see the different viewpoints. But instead, it's like, we just learn about another love triangle and that's it.
Oh, God. I feel like the goal they had was, like, we need her to go back and forget about Amano-senpai. So what we're going to do is have her go back to Earth, learn her best friend loves Amano-senpai, and then realize that she can't love him anymore for some reason. Right? And then that way she'll realize she needs to be with Vaughn. That was their goal. But they just had her, like, relive the same day, which I thought was so strange because we've seen the people on Earth reacting to her being gone over an indeterminate period of time, haven't we?
Yeah, so what's that about?
What's that about, so, Escaflowne? Yeah,
right. To give it to our audience, if they haven't seen it, it'd be weird. She wakes up, or comes to realization, or whatever, at the point where she, like, faints during track and field.
Yes. And Amano is by her bedside, and he's like, yes. I have something to tell you. And her friend shows up and interrupts them, right?
And it's just, like, so odd that she literally goes back in time.
Right, like, but she obviously remembers everything that's been happening on Gaia, but none of her friends do because it hasn't happened to them yet. They haven't seen the dragon and so on. And they never will see the dragon because Vaughn shows up on the Escaflowne the same day. Therefore, the dragon never came to Earth.
Yeah.
Why is Earth's timeline so weird? Why did they have her go? I guess they wanted her to go back to this day for the love triangle thing, right? But, like, did they really need to make things so complicated?
Like, couldn't she just remember all of that?
Or, like, go back and talk to her friend or something? Like, or maybe it's been like 4 months. Maybe she goes back and Imano and her friend are dating now, right?
Ooh, that'd be nice.
At least a little more dramatic and interesting and internally consistent.
It is just so dumb that we had that really cool scene we talked about with the pager.
Yeah, and of them going to see her mom.
Yeah, and then none of that mattered. Like, literally, that was like retconned.
Yes.
Or whatever, removed.
Whenever a character, this always reminds me, you know, where it's like a character gets to see what their life would have been like in another situation.
Oh, like their life flashes before their eyes or something.
Well, but like they see they get a chance to redo it, or they see what life would have been like if they hadn't gotten involved in the plot. This is a common anime trope. I'm thinking especially of the one in Gridman, where it's like the fog monster and they all live in a happy world where there's no kaiju. And at the end, and none of them are friends. And then at the end, they realize that they're actually like in a dream. This feels a little like they wanted to do that. Like, she goes back to her high school life and her high school romance. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I wish they had done a little more with her being like, not just loving Vaughn, but being like, wow, high school is not important compared to what I've been doing for the last couple of months.
Yeah, there's like a certain level of, it's like, what is it? It's not Maslow's hierarchy, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's like, it's like that, where it's like, okay, I don't care about school. I gotta go stop a war.
Yeah, there's a certain level of intensity that's missing here. I don't know. I just think that was a very weird... I think that... I get why they would do this, but I feel like they used it for all the wrong reasons. Mm-hmm. Do we really need this? Exactly. Like you said, do we really need this nth love triangle?
Evidently we did, because that's why they put it in.
Evidently. Yeah, Dan's right. Evidently we did. All right. Here's the other thing. This is the other big twist, right? Alan, sorry, I'm having a hard time with this twist, to be honest. Alan has a sister? All right.
Dang, man. Here's the thing. They really shoehorned this plot point in, let me tell you.
It is entirely possible that Alan mentioned at one point having a sister, right?
Sure.
I do not think at any point in the show up till this point, Alan then said... Oh, yeah, I have a sister. She was abducted at the age of 5. We don't know what happened to her. Right? I think I would have remembered that plot point. I think most of the time on Alan's Family was spent talking about his deadbeat dad who loves Hitomi's grandmother, right?
Yes.
So, what? He has a sister, and here she is, and she's been in the show the whole time.
Yeah, I think my favorite is, like, she just, like, shows up with these dead eyes and she's like, I'm here. Well, it's like so weird. She then goes and murders a butterfly.
Yes.
And then that triggers her transformation back into the twist, It's so dumb. It's like the dumbest twist in the world, right?
It's really dumb.
I think the broad problem is that, like, okay, Hitomi going back to Earth is a twist because you never see it coming, but, like, it doesn't, like, break anything.
You knew it was always vaguely possible.
But this makes, like, 20 plot holes all in one go, and you're like, all right, what?
Let's talk about this. Like, here's what I think. One, you could have done this with different foreshadowing, right? If episode 23 wasn't the, or 24 even, the very first time we heard about Alan's sister, you could have worked this in a different way. Secondly, we thought Dylan Dow was a girl in their first appearance, you remember?
Yes, I think I asked that.
Because
right?
Dylan Dow was voiced by a woman voice actress. So they could have done this thing where they made Dylan Dow's gender very ambiguous, right?
Yes.
And had maybe people call them him. But voiced by a woman and never... But they could not resist, and I swear this is why it happened, they could not resist having Dylan Dow take their shirt off every other scene.
I think that's the part that really makes this feel cheap, right?
Yes.
Because I don't want to, like...
constantly taking his shirt off in this show.
That's I don't want to, like, you know, force body conformity upon anyone. But when you think about a show that was syndicated on Japan, you can't just have... boobies hanging out, right?
You could have at one point in time, for sure, but not
that
in this
is
show.
Actually true.
And here's another thing: when Dylan Dow become is it Celeste?
Like, I mean, I don't even remember.
When Dylan Dow is sister mode, Dylan Dow Celis has booby. Like, that's it. She has a different body shape altogether. Her whole body morphs, including her face.
I also think her face is, like, a little softer.
It is.
Because, like, Dylan Dow has, like, very sharp features. And then she becomes, like, very, like, oh, I'm tiny.
Like, it's not even that that she just, like, doesn't appear to have breasts. It's that she grows them periodically.
At will.
Like, how could... I don't know. It feels like... It feels so unforeshadowed, right?
If, yeah. All right, let's talk about the other thing then.
What's the other thing?
Her lion friend? Her dog friend?
Jajamu?
Jajuka.
Jajuma?
Jujama? It's like Jujaka?
Jujuka. Damn. We suck. All right. So... Dylan Dow has this, like, friend, assistant, mech pilot.
Guardian, if you will.
Guardian. Let me find the name. Let me find the name.
I swear, it's Jajuka, man.
Jajuka, yeah. By the way, all right, Jajuka's first appearance is, I'm pretty sure, in episode 22. Yes, it is.
Which also, as you said, feels very cheap. There is a way they could have worked this character in much earlier.
And the thing about Jajuka is that he raised Dylan Dow, right?
Yes. He was the guy who took care of girl mode.
Yeah.
When she was abducted.
Selena. It's Selena, or C-E-L-E-N-A. Selena, or whatever. Shelena.
Oh, okay.
Shelena. Serena, maybe. Selena. So Selena Shezar. He raises her when she's been kidnapped, and he's nice to her, and he doesn't want her to be experimented on, even though they do anyway. And Dylan Dow loves Jajuka, and Jajuka wants to protect Dylan Dow, etc., etc. They've been BFFs since the dawn of time. Which is, of course, why Jajuka doesn't show up until the end of the show. There were so many scenes with Dylan Dow just sitting around with a ship brooding.
Like, he could have been there.
Jajuka could have been there the whole time. It wouldn't have broken any of the plot. Which makes me think Jajuka is either a late addition because they killed all of Dylan Dow's other characters he talked to, right?
Uh-huh.
They're like, oh, we need a character for Dylan Dow to talk to. All of his soldiers are dead, and Falcon has abandoned the Empire. I guess we'll make another one, and then they make them really important.
I also like how they make it a completely new species of humanoid animal thing we've never met before. It's just like a dog person now. Or lion? Like, what is it?
A dog. I think he's a dog. He looks like I don't know. He's not an uninteresting character. He's well designed, I think, but he really shows up way too late.
So I would have liked it, even if he showed up late, for them to show why he showed up late. Like, it'd be cool if he was like, it is a prison cell, and he's like, I gotta be there for you or something, right? And it like shows him like breaking out in the commotion or something. I don't know. Like, they could have done something, I think, a little bit more tactful than just have him show up. He just shows up. Like, how does that make any sense?
It doesn't. Also, I'm looking ahead, and I'm pretty sure that in the movie, Dylan Dow is not Alan's sister.
Well, that's good. That's a good change. Maybe this is like a Macross Do You Remember Love thing, where we sort of need to watch it because it fixes all of the stuff that's wrong.
I know the movie also messes with people's age. Which is a good thing to me, because we'll get into that for other reasons later. This is such an unforced error, right?
Yes.
I'm trying to figure out what this adds to the story. Like, why you have to do this. Why does Dylan Dow needs to be Alan's sister, right? And maybe it's because they needed to give a female character to Alan so that he'll stop loving Hitomi. I think, and that's basically what he says. He's like, oh, I just was missing my sister. That's why I thought I loved Hitomi.
Bitch. Which is...
Okay, we'll get to the romance later. But that's the only function. That's the only, like, thematic reason that I can think of doing this in this show.
I It just feels so dumb, right? I can't explain it.
Yes. Yes, it is dumb. I mean, it's Dylan Dow. This character's been in the show since, like, episode 2. You really couldn't have foreshadowed this.
Let's talk about the final scene then with Vaughn and him then, because that's kind of what this leads into as well. So Dylan Dow, as we said before, is fighting Vaughn. And then our boy, Alan, is like, yo, I can't let you kill this person because they're my sister. And yeah. Vaughn's like,
what?
What? I'm going to kill them anyhow because they destroyed my entire kingdom and killed everyone. And then Vaughn,
I'm pretty sure Dylan Dell's a guy.
Like, yeah. And then Alan's like, no, they're my crimes too. And so then there's going to be this like farce of a final showdown, which honestly, I think it would have been kind of cool if Van just killed Alan and then his sister was like, oh no.
That may just reflect on how much we don't like Alan though.
Yeah. Like I was like, that could be a compelling ending, right? Like, Alan dies, but he does it to change Vaughn's mind. Like, you know, he does the death thing, like La La Soon, where he dies.
To bring peace between the two of them.
Yeah, and his, like, spirit goes into Vaughn's head for, like, 20 seconds and goes, hey, man, I know how you feel, but don't be angry.
I mean, find based on La La Soon, that is not a successful tactic, as it engendered another 20 years of conflict.
Maybe I should have used another analogy, but I could have seen how that could have been a compelling ending, yeah. But instead we just got not that.
Let's talk about this ending, mostly because here's my question, Dan. What is the Emperor's plan? I thought I understood it before I watched these episodes.
Well, okay, what did you think before?
The Emperor was going to build one of those machines that they had in Atlantis that allowed him to make his thoughts into reality, right? He was going to get that Atlantean omnipotence going. And he was going to rule the world and make it perfect, right?
Okay, but like, I'm with you.
What he does here is, one, he gets himself stabbed. He wants to get stabbed. Then him getting stabbed, sorry, the way Vulcan he doesn't Sephiroth him. He jumps down on him and he does an overhand cleave. So it's slightly different than Sephiroth.
Though he has black angel wings and everything.
Vulcan is the most Sephiroth character I've seen outside of Sephiroth, I think. It's really bad, actually, how much he's like Sephiroth.
When did Witch come out?
That is a great question, because I think probably right around the same time. Vision of Escaflowne, 1996. And Final Fantasy VII came out in 1997. He actually predates Sephiroth.
Okay, I'm like pogging a little bit here for that, because I assumed it would be completely the other way around, and now I know that Final Fantasy VII is just a cheap ripoff of this.
I feel like it's more likely based on the timelines that Sephiroth was designed at the same time as Vulcan, but convergent evolution, isn't that?
Yeah,
awkward?
They made the same character in Japan. People were thinking about angel winged,
black angel winged katana wielding white haired brooding swordsman.
Dang, really weird how that lines up.
Wait, watch for the new Echo Fighter in Smash Bros. Vulcan.
No, if they did that, and then of course it goes to the interview, and he goes, I just really like Escaflowne, so that's why I put it into Smash. And you're like,
honestly, like, I could buy
that. That makes sense, Sakurai. I'm cool. That was the reason for Terry, right? He goes, I just really like Final Fight, right?
Yeah, so I put Terry really likes that series. So instead, what happens? So he lets himself get killed. I didn't even finish describing what happens. Vulcan cuts him in half, and his sword breaks, and the tip ricochets back at himself and kills him.
Which, like,
what?
Is kind of the most loser way to die, right?
I don't know. One, I don't know if that's how swords work. Like, did he have enough force at the tip to, like, gunshot it back at himself?
I've never stabbed a human being with a sword.
I've stabbed a lot of human beings, but I've never slashed one vertically, so.
What if he has, like, Isaac Newton, right? Think about this. Big brain. Got a big brain.
Yeah.
Probably got a big skull, too. Maybe there's enough power there to chip a sword in, too.
So, well, here's what I'll say. Fencing weapons can snap and shoot off the tip, right?
It's killed someone before. Way,
well, that was slight. I think that was something different. That was when the blade actually went in through the mask.
Okay,
they changed the regulations to make the masks tighter so that nothing can get through them. But basically,
that makes more sense.
If your weapon snaps, it can shoot But that's because fencing weapons are springy. They're light, yes, and they're meant to bend. And of course, if that bend snaps, that's a lot of built-up force.
Sure.
Fulkin's got a katana, right? That thing's coming hard down from above, folded 1,000 times. Like, I don't think that's how that works. What did it ricochet off of? Isaac Newton's a squishy-looking dude. Clavicle or something. I don't know. And so, anyway, he dies. Fulkin dies. Hitomi's like, wow, this sucks. Herb thinking it sucks sets off her little gem, which triggers the fortune machine.
Yes.
And now we're in the zone of absolute fortune.
The zone of absolute fortune.
Yes. Some Evangelion-ass bullshit happening in this show. And so inside the zone of absolute fortune, my best guess is that it makes people's wishes come true, like Hitomi. Because you know how every time Hitomi wishes for something, it comes true because she's got that stone? I think maybe now everyone has that. So whatever they want happens. And what they want is to fight in a war?
I guess? Or like to win the war? Or something?
Yeah, so they're all fighting each other. And that's... Or it makes all bad fortune happen, but that doesn't make much sense either, but I guess that would explain how Fulkin died in such an improbable way.
But doesn't he die before the Zone of Absolute Fortune?
Yeah, you're right, so I don't know. And so, anyway, whatever it does, the end result is that everyone's just fighting each other, and it's chaos, and things are getting burnt down. It's terrible. Dornkirk ghosts up behind Hitomi, right? Of course, he's still around, essentially, as a green ghost. And he's like, ah, yes, all according to plan. What? You're dead. I don't think this is all according to plan. You don't get to fake it. You're like, oh, I died? I meant for that to happen.
Yeah, so about that, continue with plan B. I don't know. I'm going to be honest. At this point, I was zoning out a little because I was like, this is so dumb. Because I think if you don't remember, this is like foreshadowed like a few episodes before. Oh, like Hitomi's like, oh no, Fulkin's going to die. And it's literally exact same stuff that happens. And then it does it again. And it's like, oh my God.
Yeah. So for me, this feels a lot like the ending. I said Eva, but maybe more like Giant Robo where like the world goes out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And they're all standing around inside the robot trying to figure out what to do with themselves and their egos. And so Dornkirk is like, yeah, this is what I wanted. But if you remember earlier when Dornkirk teleported them to his palace to exposit, he's like, I came to Gaia and I saw a world in squalor, right? And he wanted to use science and technology to make people's lives as beautiful and better as possible, right?
So the involved taking over their lands.
Right, so he was like, I'm going to conquer everyone so that I can institute a perfect scientific world.
Yes.
How does any of that, as his motivation, which is plausible for a villain motivation, right? I'll take it. How does any of that track with any of what happens here? How is any of this his plan?
I don't know. Which maybe explains why Fulkin does do the change of heart, right? Because he's like, this isn't what I was fighting for, right? Because originally he was, like, sick of... I guess Fulkin originally joined because, like, he saw what was happening to the two cat kids. Like, the race, the beast... What is it called?
The cat girls?
When you're racist against another species.
Specious?
Yeah.
Racist?
These people were specious, and he's like, we can't have this. I'm going to join the Empire to stop this horrible conflict.
And he, like, didn't like fighting dragons or something like that, right?
Yeah. And maybe that's why Fulkin changed sides. Because he's like, no, this emperor is just actually crazy.
Yeah. He doesn't... Well, because then the emperor is there taking the high road. He's like, look at all this chaos. All they want is war. Look at all this meaningless fighting. Like, this is on you, dude. The emperor caused all of this. You don't get to be there like, look at these foolish humans. Like, this is all your fault. You started the war. I don't know if he didn't invent the mechs, but he invented the strong ones. Like, the invisible flying liquid metal ones. That's on you.
Yes.
When Alan and Vaughn are fighting, that's your fault too. You're the one who kidnapped this dude's sister and brainwashed her into being Char Aznable. Like,
God.
You did this, Emperor Dornkirk. Isaac Newton.
Yeah, you should call him Isaac Newton.
What a jerk. I hate when villains do that. This is really common, where they're like, look at this. This is all your fault. How are you going to, like, to take responsibility? And you're like, you're the one who set this up. Like, I don't know what eagle lurks in the heart of men, but you didn't have to cause a war to prove it.
Was that just like a Tolkien reference there?
No, that's the shadow, the pulp hero. Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The shadow knows. you never read any pulp novels growing up, Dan?
No, I can't say I did. Sorry.
I unfortunately, that's what I grew up on, yeah.
That explains a lot.
It does explain a lot, honestly. I read all 70 Doc Savage books by the age of 12, yeah.
Were you a reader?
I was a huge reader, yeah, and now I'm a failure. Now I do everything in my power to avoid reading.
Because says the man whose eyes is glued to his Shonen Jump subscription.
That's fair, too. So, all right, so the ending makes no sense. We've established that.
Yeah.
But there's something else that's maybe more important to talk about. The other part of the ending that makes no sense, Dan.
The other part of the ending.
No one gets together in this. The show ends and no one is together.
Not a single couple.
This is a romance series with zero couples.
Zero couples.
And I could accept this if I felt like that was a healthy decision for everyone involved.
Except it clearly shows that one is not a healthy decision. It clearly shows.
Yes. So it's like, I would kind of like a romance series where, like, they're all pining for each other and they're all high schoolers, and at the end they realize that they're, like, adults and actually high school romance doesn't mean that much, and they sort of grow up and but still maybe are still friends, but they've learned something about themselves. You don't have to have a romance series where everyone gets together.
Sure.
That's not happening here, Dan. No one's grown.
All right, let's go over the big one then.
Getting heated. All right.
Okay.
I'm gonna peek my microphone talking about romance.
And this is the one that I think if any of them should have been together, it should have been this one. Maybe you can agree.
Oh, absolutely. So Vaughn and Hitomi do get together before the end of the show. Where they kiss, right? That's the big moment. And they're like, I'm here for you. Like, I'm only care about this world because of you, Va. And I want to go back to Gaia because I love you so much. And he's like, Hitomi, I'd do anything for you. We're both 15. And then, so they're together. And then they're just not.
It's, like, so dumb because he's like, hey, let's go explore Gaia with my Escaflowne. Let's, like see everything. And she's like, I love that. Let's do it. And then you're right. Like, and then they're like, yeah, but we can't. Sucks.
Time to go back to Earth. Also, take my crystals so I can't come back to Gaia.
And it's like, but why? Like, Tomi's grandma just went back and forth like a couple times. Why can't she just visit? Like at the I could have seen them do this, right? She goes, I'm a human girl. I need to do my human things. So I will visit you occasionally. And that's like, we'll elope a little bit.
Spiritually, right. But like, but actually what they meant was, I'll visit you spiritually? Psychically? That we're together in our hearts? But you aren't together. Literally, you aren't together. You just think about each other.
It's unbelievable. It's unbearable.
It makes no sense. So, okay. I understand Hitomi not wanting to stay on Gaia, because like, family and friends on Earth.
Yeah, she's a human Earthling. Girl.
But I also could see Vaughn deciding to stay on Earth because, as you know, his entire family is dead, as is his kingdom. His only friend left alive is Meryl.
And like,
let's be honest, she's a non-factor. She's annoying.
I do like the scene, though. This is the only scene that I liked that came from this, is when she's standing at like the I don't know what. She's like on a dock.
It's like a train platform on the sea.
On the sea, yeah. Okay, that's a way better way to describe what I was thinking of. And she's like looking off and she sees like an apparition of Vaughn. And they're, you know, it's cute.
He's doing like a paint me like your French girls pose on the rocks with his angel wings out. Don't undersell how funny this is.
The thing I love the best about that, though, is this girl goes, yo, Hitomi, want to do a tarot card reading for me? And she goes, nah, I don't believe in that. And it's like,
that's a good line. That's a good one.
Yeah, right. She's like, I don't believe in fortune anymore. It's like, oh my God.
She's like, actually, don't ask me to reach your fortune or terrible things will happen to you.
It's like, it is like that. I like that as like the single, that she, that's the only thing that happened in this entire show is that she was like, hey, I don't believe in fortune. You make your own, right?
We sort of glossed over Malerna totally forgiving her for like giving her a bad reading and accidentally destroying her wedding.
And also potentially ruining a relationship or something. I don't know what's going on there.
Well, I think that relationship we know for a fact was doomed to fail. Because remember, Hitomi had a vision that if they got married, Malerna would cheat on Dryden.
I think we can solve this. We just kill off Alan. If
that
we would have just killed off Alan, everyone could have
That would
happy.
Solve a lot of problems. So anyway, my main... Before we move on to Dryden and Alan, because that's its own thing, my main issue is like... Is Hitomi and Vaughn just never going to date anyone else? Like, Hitomi is 21 and she's out with her college friends drinking. And they're like, so Hitomi, like, do you have a partner? And she's like, oh, my boyfriend goes to a different dimension. Like, what's the agenda here, Hitomi? Are you just going to pine over 15-year-old Vaughn for the rest of your life?
And that's why it does feel like this is like such a middle school, literally like a middle school thing where it's like, you get your first crush in middle school and you're like all worked up and huffed and abuffed about it. And you're like, I'm going to be with you forever. And you're like so distraught when things are going wrong. But it's like the chances that you were actually going to be together for the rest of your life is so minuscule. It's unbelievable, which is why I can't take any of this seriously.
And what's crazy. She's like, oh, I'll just think of you forever, Vaughn. Like as if that's it. That's the end of her romantic journey. She's 15. He's 15. God, I hope I didn't stop developing at 15. What a nightmare. It just makes no sense to me. I think it's like, it's so high school. You're right. It's so trapped in this perception that like nothing matters except for that. Ugh. Lame. Not as lame as what happens to the best character in this show, though. Am I right?
Listen, man, this one's actually like really upsetting because it comes out of nowhere for seemingly no reason as well.
Right. So, well, let's run this. So, first, remember, Hitomi confesses to Malerna and Dryden that she totally lied about how their marriage was going to be successful and that their marriage was going to be absolute terrible and yes. It's her fault, etc. And they're just like, okay, we should probably fight a war first. Which, respect to Dryden for priorities, right?
Yeah.
Probably the only character in this show whose head is screwed on straight. So then Dryden, like, is running the country, essentially. And Malerna comes to visit him, and he takes off his wedding ring, and he's like, I can't be a man. I'm not a man enough for you yet. Like you need someone who can really take care of you, so I'm going to go leave, and I'll come back when I'm, you know, good enough for you. And she's like, but I might not love you then. And he's like, oh, well. Dryden, I think you've got things backwards, man. He's like, I'm not good enough for you, Malerna. I can't love you. Come on. You are the only character in this show who's good enough for anyone. No one's good this enough for you.
I know, right? I hate when they do this stuff or a character goes, I'm not good enough for you. I think this is like a very anime tropey thing too, right?
Yeah.
Because in the real world, people are like intrinsically a little selfish, right?
They're like, oh, this like smart hottie wants to date me. I may not be good enough for them, but I'm not going to say no. Like, I don't know. I've never known someone who would turn someone down because they're not good enough for them.
Exactly.
It is like, not that something is that comes up in real thing. Life relationships.
Yeah. And, like, for example, if I'm dried, right? I'm a hunk. Paint the picture. I know I'm not. I'm a hunk. I got tons of money. I got some royalty in me or whatever. You know,
he's very smart.
Upper
yeah.
class, right? Why would I do this? It just doesn't make sense.
It's the...
like, well, I am...
Like, yeah, what? So mad about this.
And, like, the thing is like, we can, you know, paint a picture. Dryden is not inexperienced, too, right? He was mooching on a mermaid earlier as well. Like, he is not...
He's an adult, by which I mean
he was almost married at one point.
He's 21, you might remember. He is 6 years older than Malerna, so Dryden, that is a strike against you.
Yes, but I guess
verging dangerously into Alan territory here.
The correct decision. It just feels so cheap as well. Maybe this whole ending for me, that's why this like show just feels cheap.
Yeah.
Like, there was no reason for him to do that. And then he does it, and it's supposed to be, I think they're supposed to show it that, like, Dryden is this character that is always taking the moral high ground and always very mature. But this is such an immature thing to do because it's like he thinks he's a child in a way. Like, he thinks he's immature.
Yeah.
Which shows that he's lost in his own mind.
I have, like, no beef with Malerna and Dryden splitting up. I think that's fine on its face. My problem is the way they do it. If anything, he should have been like, Malerna, I can't stay married to you because you clearly love someone else, and I'm like, I deserve better than that.
Yeah.
He's like, you only married me out of convenience. You don't actually, like, care about me or want me to be around, and I can't live that kind of life, right? Like, Dryden, man, I feel bad for him.
Yeah. And then I guess we should talk about a little bit on Malerna,
yeah.
Malerna's side of that.
We should say the way this is structured is literally just a series of scenes where we see what happened to everyone.
Yes, and like every it's like an epilogue.
So we get that scene with Dryden and Malerna, and we get some other scenes with Alan, we get some other scenes with Meryl and Vaughn and Hitomi, and then we get a scene with Malerna and her sister are just sort of hanging out on the docks together, right? They're just chilling. It's just the two of them. Is it her sister or is it her, like, it's not her sister, her sister's dead. It's like her assistant princess woman, whatever, yeah. Mm-hmm. They're just like, that's good, Malerna. You're not mature enough to be in a relationship.
You should take some time off, you know, become, you know, 20, 21, and come back around to it.
Wait till your age, get things a little more age appropriate.
Wait till your brain's at least developed a little.
Yeah.
Right? Come on, girl.
Man, what's so annoying to me is I've like read and watched a decent number of high school romances, right? Because let's be honest, most romance anime are set in high school.
Yes,
most anime, have to be. Right? That's just how it is. And I've never had any beef with, like, the high school kids getting together in that or, like, having serious relationships because they're all high school kids dating high school kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're all approaching it from the exact same level of maturity. What's so weird about this show is that, like, half the cast is adults, half the cast is kids. They're all royalty for some reason. And there's just so much complicated stuff happening here that none of these people have any chance to be on the same level with each other. It's all just insane.
Sure, there's like a I don't want to say like there's a power gap, but
yes, there is a power imbalance. And there's this weird dependency that Malerna has on, like, on Alan and on Dryden. Mm-hmm. So I like this ending for her because she's not, like, being dependent on one of them.
I think this is what every single character is missing. They're missing self-respect.
Yeah.
We talked about this before.
Yeah.
But it's like Malerna, like, she doesn't need a man to like, you know, get through life. Like, she can go do something, right? And then she figures that out. Dryden's self-respect should be the other way around, where he doesn't. She needs to be better for him. He's already better than her, right?
Yeah,
objectively. But like no character has, like, any amount of self-respect. Like we were saying earlier, Hitomi's just gonna not love anyone for the rest of her life now because she fell in love at 15 years old for, like, a couple months. Like,
with a dude from another planet. Oh my god.
Get over it, girl.
It's not even like he died. You could be together if you had chosen to, and you chose the hardest possible route for yourselves. Alright, we gotta talk about the elephant in the room. My least favorite character, I think. So, Alan Shezar is 21. Keep that in mind. Keep reminding yourself that. Alan Shezar is 21. He's just discovered he still has a sister. Everyone's just discovered he has a sister. But before that, he's like... He also got mind-controlled into kissing Hitomi a few episodes ago.
Yeah.
And he's like, Hitomi, marry me. And she's like, good stalling, and then he has to go off and fight a war, right?
Yeah.
Alan is literally in love with everyone. He's in love with Malerna. He's in love with Hitomi. He's in love with Malerna's older sister he had a kid with. Like, Alan needs to stop falling in love with people. He needs to go back to that border outpost that was only men, right? And just stay there for another 10 years.
Maybe that's why he's so horny, Ian.
Maybe.
He's like... really pining for some literally anything. He's like, listen, man, you're around Alan too long, he'll start to get a little too close and touchy with you, and then you know something. Because Alan is he's a little gross, right?
Yeah,
He's got no loyalty.
He's a little not more even than to his a own son. Gross. Yes. Like, dude, raise your kid. Being a deadbeat dad runs in the family, I guess, huh, Alan? Like,
the worst part is, too, is he doesn't get, like, he doesn't become, like, a fatherly figure until his sister needs him. Like, he doesn't become, like, a guardian, right? It's like, dude, you have a kid. Just do that for your kid. Debatably, your child needs you more than your sister. She's, like, also 15. She can kind of fend for herself here in this universe. Go take care of your 8-year-old little boy.
Okay, by the way, that is Malerna's sister. She's just, like, the middle child, I think.
That girl?
The one who's hanging out with Malerna? Yeah. She's just extremely unimportant in the scale of, like, sisters of Astoria.
Man, that really... She drew, like, the best one, right? Like, she won the lottery.
Yeah.
She didn't die from childbirth or whatever.
She's not saddled with a useless partner.
Like, she's just hanging out.
So, Dan, I think you're right that everyone in the show needs more self-respect. Maybe Alan needs less. Alan needs to realize he's lower than dirt or something.
He needs to be humbled. Nothing will humble him.
He just, like, wanders through people's lives destroying things by accident because he can't stop falling in love. It's very annoying.
He needs some help, man. And I don't know what can help him.
And so I'd like to close this off, Dan. Do you remember a few weeks ago when we were trying to predict who would end up with who, and I said, foolishly, that Vaughn and Alan must be a popular pairing in fanfiction? I've gone back to the fanfiction on Archive of Our Own, and now that we know who all these characters are, and we know the final pairings, of which there are none, I'm going to read out to you the top most popular pairings on this website.
Yeah, give me, like, the
and
top five.
Keep in mind, this is important to remember, this is English. And maybe some other languages, but this is not a website that Japanese fans use.
Uh-huh.
So, number one is Vaughn and Hitomi, right?
Sure.
Nothing surprising there. Number two is Malerna and Dryden.
Okay.
Sure. Number three is Dilindau and Gati. Now, Dan, do you remember who Gati is?
Hold on.
I'm gonna post a picture of it into our little chat here so you can see a picture.
Is Gaudi the first guy who always goes to Dylan Dow's room and gives him, like, the news? It's like, hey, we gotta go.
Yes.
Kinda.
He's like he looks like a little girl. He's the second in command.
This might be getting close to a boundary. Is this a yaoi relationship? Is this...
I mean, it's gay, but I don't know, because Dilindau is both a man and a woman.
That's kind of what I was getting at.
God, all right, in a moment I am going to filter for that and see if I can find out some more information from the summaries of these fics. But Ares Aston and Fulcan Fonel. Ares is the middle sister of the Malerna. So this is a funny one that I never thought about. Is Malerna's middle sister with Fulcan. That's an interesting one, isn't it? I don't know if they ever interact in this show. I don't even know if they appear on screen with each other.
Okay, sure. I mean, I like the creativity on that one.
Me too. Next is Vaughn Fonel and Selena Shezar. So that's female Dilindau. Which predicted,
like, bury the hatchet.
I think I predicted Vaughn Dilindau, right? So I think that Vaughn Selena makes sense. But remember, Selena has no memory of being Dilindau, right? But Selena's also like a mental 5-year-old when we see her.
Yeah.
Because they're like, she hasn't aged since the operation. Maybe she's like 10. So, Vaughn, I thought you were age appropriate. Next is Dilindau and Vaughn. So there you go.
Sure.
Kanzaki Hitomi and Alan Shezar.
That's far, man. That is far down that list.
And Marlene and Alan. So that's the oldest sister who died.
Man, this really sucks for our girl Meryl.
Merla is not on here, and Malerna is in only one of these with Dryden. We do not see any Malerna. We do not see any, like, Malerna Alan.
That is really interesting that Malerna isn't, like, the second most popular one, and that's it.
Yeah. So I am going to scroll through so we can find out if these Dillendal fics involve Dillendal being a man or a woman. Because I am curious about this. Here's one where they all work in a coffee shop instead of anything in the series actually happening. That's a classic.
I actually dislike that fanfic. There's a famous trope.
There's a lot of famous coffee shop AUs, as they're called.
Gundam Apartment. Apartment of Gundam.
Do you mean the manga series?
Yeah, where all of the white base lives in an apartment.
Yeah.
I thought that was cute until I realized how unoriginal it was. And I was like, oh, no, I don't like this anymore.
No, it looks like all of these are Dillendal being a man.
Okay, I mean, that's fine, too.
This one involves Dillendal going to the mall. So there you go. That's where we're at. Honestly, some of those pairings are better than what we got with this show. So,
there were pairings.
There were pairings. I'm still pretty heated about it. I cannot believe the romance ended this way.
Well, okay, how about this?
I feel like we have to watch the movie just to get any sort of resolution.
This last one's a little ambiguous.
Yeah.
Amano Senpai and the pink red-haired girl.
Oh, right. We forget her name, but it's Hitomi's friend, best friend, from back on Earth, who secretly loves Amano Senpai, but also keeps encouraging Hitomi to date him.
Yes.
I think it's meant to be like she realizes she doesn't have a chance, so she's trying to encourage her friend to get the happiness she never had. Once again, value yourself more, Hitomi's friend.
Right.
Have some self-respect.
Be like, hey, best friend, I think we both really like this guy. But, you know, like, have it, you know, talk it out, you know?
You know what I just realized? I think Amano Senpai might be the most balanced, normal, well-adjusted character in this show. He has a crush on Hitomi, so he goes to confess to her. What a normal thing to do, right? And it's not his fault the dragon shows up or anything like that. He never acts creepy. He, like, behaves appropriately as a friend and tries to help her.
Yeah.
Man, he's the only one in this show I consider qualified to be in a relationship.
I'm not going to be racist against anyone born on Gaia, but...
But...
Maybe people from Gaia, you know, they should step it up.
What's going on over there?
Us humans, we really...
We got it together in a way that we bring it. Doesn't. Oh, man. All right. Well, I don't have anything else to say on the romance. I think we should move to our conclusion, right?
Sure. I'm ready to wrap this up.
There's no new mechs either, so... Oh, well.
Very mech light show.
Dillendal gets it's like a slightly a different looking.
I was gonna say, this show is like oddly, like, there's no new mechs, but there's still mechs in like almost every episode. It's like really a weird balance.
It is. Dillendal gets like a rebuilt version of his Gaimaleth, but it's not really different. It's got some like embossing.
Yeah.
It's got embellishments. But you're right. There's a fight in almost every episode. Lots of Gaimalefs are on screen. There are really good ones. I thought the fight between Vaughn and Alan was really well animated, right? I thought that was a good one. But, like, they aren't really rolling out new models. And that's more of a Super Robot Gundam thing, is constantly introducing new suits. Because Macross doesn't do this either, right?
Exactly. This is a very close show to Macross.
Speaking of which, for our related recommendations... Definitely check out some Macrosses. Probably Do You Remember Love, or just the original. If this show scratches your itch, not Seven, not Plus. We haven't seen Delta yet.
Does that mean we're?
The next thing on our list has to be Delta, right? Like that's the
like
next,
we can. We haven't watched a Macross in a while. That's all I'm going to say.
An honorary Macross. We may end up there. And then the other one I have here, I haven't seen it, but Magic Knight Ray Earth is a magical girl shoujo mecha series.
Ah, I remember us talking about
this. I think by Clamp, so it's probably pretty good.
Oh, okay.
Dan, what are your final thoughts here? I know I jumped ahead. The segue was just too good.
I think I talked about this last week, where I really liked that set of episodes. And I did not really like this set of episodes. Which does sort of taint the show. Like, if the finale is kind of weak, it really does bring down the rest of the show.
Mm-hmm.
I think the show is still good. I still think I would recommend this to people, but I don't think it's a show I can take seriously and give, like, a real hearty recommendation. in the way that, like, I think I can really actually recommend Macross. Be like, it's really good. It's, you know, it's fun. It's awesome. While I think this falls a little bit short. Mostly due to the fact that I think the love triangle, hexagon, octagon, that didn't work out. And then also, like, at the, well, I guess, no, Do You Remember Love also has, like, a really, not Do You Remember Love, Original Macross also has a really dumb ending, where it goes on, like, an extra 6 episodes for no reason.
It's kind of good, though, because that, unlike this show, that show uses the time to resolve the relationship in an interesting way. Right?
But getting back to my point, I don't like how this show ends its, like, main conflict as well. Like, we talked about, like, the whole part with Dunkirk, like, doesn't make any sense either. And it's never explained. It's good. I give it, like, a 1 thumbs up, you know? What about you, Ian?
Yeah, this is a tricky one. Even though I've been complaining basically all episode, I didn't actually dislike watching these. They were, like, still entertaining. And I still, like, really wanted to see where it ended up, even if I don't like where it ended up. I think I see why a lot of people have this as one of their favorites, because it's probably pretty formative if you saw this at a certain time or age. And if you aren't watching it as part of a parade of mech anime like we are, where we're just, like, watching one after the other, I think it probably hits different.
Sure.
And I would definitely recommend this to people who I know like romance or, like shoujo stuff or, like certain kinds of mech shows. I think there's a good audience for this. I think if you're going into this looking for a complete love story, like we were, you're a fool, and you won't enjoy it. But if you're looking for, like, a fandom where you can think about the characters for a long time, I imagine this is pretty fruitful, right? If you want to write, like, the fan fiction we were looking at about Escaflowne, if you want to write fan fiction about a series, I think this is a good one for you, because there's a lot of characters in this that you can pick up and, like, fixate on. And none of them end up paired, so you can do whatever you want with them.
The world is your oyster.
But as, like, a complete viewing experience, I do think it rates lower than the Macross is generally. Probably better than 7, just because this show has a level of brevity. 7 also doesn't have an ending, though, remember? Like, at the end of Macross 7, they're like, we did it. And, like, no romance happens, no explanation. Like, it's like a kung fu movie. Like, the credits roll a minute after the final fights end.
And it's like...
So
maybe around this time, Shoji Kawamori's just like...
He's working something out.
He's a little lost. You know?
But, I don't know, I would recommend this generally. I think it's a good show, probably better than average. And it's definitely exciting the whole way through. But it's not, like, it's not my favorite.
Yeah.
I'm a little disappointed because I thought I would really love this show and I did not.
We just have such high hopes.
Well, next week, Dan, to make up for Dryden, we're going to go see the other movie that Dryden stars in. We're going to go watch Disney's Atlantis: The Lost Empire.
our like inside joke has become real.
Yeah, it's on Disney Plus, available with parents everywhere. It's a short movie. Just watch it. It'll be out next week. I think, no lying, we already recorded it out of order just because of the way our schedule worked out. It's a good one. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's a definitely different since we've never done Western animation before.
Yeah, there's a lot to say. We had a great time, so tune in next week for some Disney's Atlantis. Maybe even if you've never seen the movie, because it's a weird one.
Everyone should watch it, though.
Oh, I forgot to mention this, and I want to get it out of the way now because it's going to be a few weeks before I have a chance to mention it again. We asked for low-stakes mech anime last week, and we did get a really nice email from Michael, who listed a number of them, talked about, like, what does low-stakes mean, provided a chart we can use to chart series on terms of stakes, which next time we do, like, a anniversary episode or just a discussion episode without a show, I think that'd be a fun thing to do.
Break out the charts.
But he recommended some here, like IGPX, which says all this. I've never heard of it, but all the stakes are personal. Zoids, New Century Zero.
Zoids.
The Build Fighters mega series, you know, Build Gunpla, Build Beginners G, Fighters, Tri, Divers. Battlelogs, Divers. And then Battletech, the propaganda cartoon. The US cartoon, someone else, I think maybe it was Michael, recommended to us, that is just like an in-universe propaganda piece.
Oh, okay.
So it's all like a film. It's like a film of a film.
Interesting. I've never heard of this.
Someone DM'd it to us on Twitter as well. If it was someone else, then that means that two different people have recommended the BattleTech cartoon to us, which might mean we have to watch it soon.
Oh god. Wait, it's a cart. It's not an anime?
I think it's a cartoon. BattleTech's a Western property.
Man, I don't know anything.
Did you not play the really sick BattleTech PC game? A few years ago?
I own it, and I've
What about MechWarrior? You ever play MechWarrior?
I have played MechWarrior.
There you go. I'm pretty sure that's in the same universe. All right. If you want to reach out to us and really lay it on thick about the BattleTech propaganda cartoon, you can reach us at mechadoaboutnothing@gmail.com. That's the name of the podcast, @gmail.com. Our website is mechado.moe, and our Twitter account is @mechadopodcast. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Ian.
Until next week, will you be able to survive?